Thank you for having me, and you can never be too Jewish.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation.
Well, I wrote my first novel when I was 8 years old. My mother typed it out for me.
Prolific, award-winning author Jay Neugeborn talks with Rabbi about his new book, Dickens in Brooklyn. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. This is a really important day in my family's life, since at my own congregation, Beit Simcha, here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live, we will celebrate my father's 100th birthday this afternoon. My dad, Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Joseph Kohan, was born April 28, 1926. He has lived an extraordinary life. First of all, living 100 years is kind of amazing to start with. When you add in the fact that my dad is still quite vibrant, and while he's had to use a walker to get around the last couple of years, he still chants Torah for us most Shabbat mornings at my synagogue, well, you have to hope that there is a productive old age in store for at least some of us. I don't know about 100 years, but boy, things really have changed over the last, 40 or 50 years with regard to longevity and vitality. When I started working as a cantor, I was 17 years old, so of course everybody was older than I was. Somebody in their 70s was considered pretty old. People in their 80s were quite rare. Today, it is common for intelligent, productive people to be well into their 90s. And when somebody dies in their early 80s, we tend to feel a bit cheated. The advances of medical science, particularly in the area of gerontology, are incredibly impressive. Still, a century is a really, really long time to live, and to be aware and cognizant and active through all of it, well, that provides some unique perspective. Now, my dad, Baruch Kohan, is not your typical guy. He started working as a cantor at the age of 17 when he led his first High Holy Day services. He served in the U.S. Navy in World War II in active duty for several years on a minesweeper. He worked in the motion picture television world as a writer and producer for over a decade, including working on well-known shows like Cisco Kid and Sea Hunt. He later taught Gene Wilder how to daven like a Polish rabbi for the movie The Frisco Kid. Baruch Kohan was a nationally known cantor and composer of Jewish music, a great singer with concert appearances all over the country. He had a concert bureau he started and ran. He taught Judaism and Jewish music at all levels, including the university level and to rabbinical seminary students. He conducted choirs, both of adults at a high level of musical performance and huge children's choirs. He authored the most important article ever written on Jewish music, published in scholarly journals. My dad put together several important collections of Jewish music in books, both his own and that of a great scholar of Jewish ethnomusicology, his first music teacher, Avram Tzvi Edelson. He became a philanthropist later for those who do work for the whole Jewish people. My dad became an ordained Orthodox rabbi along the way. He is a trained traditional cantor. He was in the Conservative Cantors Organization for many years, served on their national board. My dad, Baruch Kohan, was my first teacher of cantorial music and the most important of them, and he is a great storyteller still. Oh, and he won the Jim Click car raffle here in Tucson a couple years ago, winning a Ford Bronco Raptor off-road behemoth of a truck. He took the money, not the car. It was the first raffle he won since 1945, when he won the raffle on his ship as to which day VA Day would take place in Europe, and he won $30. My dad is the father of four, grandfather of seven, great-grandfather of five more, and was married for 59 years to my mom, Claire Kohan, who passed away less than a month before their 60th wedding anniversary. I'm probably missing a few careers and twists and turns in there. Suffice it to say, Baruch Kohan is an amazing guy, still. So today, even though it's not Father's Day, I wanted to celebrate my dad, Rabbi and Cantor Baruch J. Kohan, for all he has accomplished, and perhaps most, for the way he is still the most popular guy in the room, wherever he goes. Play us in this morning. On the day we'll celebrate his 100th birthday, this is perhaps his best composition of all, his version of the Hashkivenu, our evening prayer. It's called Let There Be Love.
Hashkivenu, Adonai Elokeinu, leshalom.
Let there be love and understanding among us. Let there be love.
That was Hashkivenu, Let There Be Love, by Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Kohan, whose 100th birthday we celebrate this afternoon at Congregation Beit Simcha. When we come back in a moment on Two Jewish, our guest this morning will be Jay Neugeborn, the distinguished writer, award-winning author, who has a new book out, Dickens in Brooklyn. It's great to have Jay back discussing his latest work. We'll hear all about it when we come back in a moment on Two Jewish.
Congregation Beit Simcha hosts a historic celebration honoring the 100th birthday of Rabbi and Cantor Baruch J. Kohan.
Hashkivenu
Everyone is invited to join us for A Century of Blessing, Sunday, April 26th, 2026, from 2 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the Congregation Sanctuary, 12111 North La Cholla Boulevard. You can find out more at www.BeitSimchaTucson.org, a true national Jewish treasure. Rabbi Baruch Kohan's century of life is defined by an extraordinary blend of spiritual leadership and artistic achievement. His diverse career spans roles as a World War II Navy sonar man, a successful TV producer during Hollywood's golden age, a prolific composer, recording artist, concert performer, author, editor, and dedicated educator. He famously taught actor Gene Wilder how to chant like a traditional rabbi for the film The Frisco Kid. Rabbi Baruch Kohan's life is a testament to the power of tradition, creativity, and joy, said Rabbi Sam Kohan of Beit Simcha. Come celebrate 100 years of his music, his teaching, and his spirit. His contributions nationally and right here make this incredible event an honor for our entire community. The Century of Blessing Party includes Baruch Kohan's music, his favorite foods, ice cream cake and bourbon, swing music by the Jazzmatics, classic cars from the 1920s, and much more. You can wish Baruch Kohan a happy 100th birthday in his tribute book and sign up to attend this great afternoon at www.BeitSimchaTucson.org or by calling 520-276-5675. Sunday, April 26th at 2 p.m. at Beit Simcha. Don't miss this historic afternoon.
We are delighted to welcome the two Jewish art guests this morning. Jay Neugeborn is an extraordinarily accomplished author, award-winning writer of novels and stories and nonfiction. His new book is autobiographical, is that the right way to put it? A series of stories based on his life and on Brooklyn. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So you've written so many terrific novels. Tell us the origins of this book.
Well, this book originated really in my desire to put a lot of the essays that I've written through the years, mostly in the last decade, to put them together rather than write another memoir. I've written a couple of books that are basically memoirs, and I didn't want to go back, but there was material in many of these essays I've been writing, especially in the last decade, that are autobiographical, about my childhood, about my time as a General Motors executive, my time activities in politics and with my synagogue. And I thought rather than do a memoir, I would just put these essays together in a book. And I found a publisher that was happy to do so.
All right. So Dickens in Brooklyn, Essays on Family, Writing, and Madness. What makes this Dickensian?
Well, Dickensian, it comes from the first essay, which is during COVID pandemic. I thought one day of, gee, maybe I will go and read all of Dickens again. Dickens was very crucial to my childhood. My parents, we lived in a small apartment in Brooklyn. I was born in 1938, so this is during the war. And my parents, 730-foot square apartment for four people.
Mm.
And my parents owned two sets of books they were very proud of, The Complete Dickens and The Complete Twain, which I knew they had obtained by clipping coupons from the New York Post.
Oh, my goodness.
And sending them in with a small amount of money until they had the complete sets. And I read most of those books during my childhood. So I thought, well, maybe I'll begin reading them again. And that conjured up a lot of memories, and especially of the similarities or the parallels between the melodramas in Dickens and the melodramas in my own family. A very, dramatic immigrant Jewish family that was unlike most of the Jewish families I knew in my neighborhood and from my friends.
We will explore that, whether they were energetic, histrionic, and how that impacted your writing and shows all through the book, Dickens in Brooklyn. When we come back in a moment with award-winning author Jay Neugeborne here on Too Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills in northwest Tucson, celebrates a terrific array of services, classes, and events this spring. Established more than 7 years ago by wonderful congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. A progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us for Shabbat services. Come Friday night, 6:30 p.m. every week, always followed by a delicious Onig Shabbat, or attend on Facebook Live. Saturday morning, Torah studies at 9 a.m. Services are at 10 a.m. with Torah reading. You can go to our website, beitsimchatucson.org, BEITSIMCHATucson.org. We welcome members and guests always. You can also call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. Religious school is available starting in August, but some summer programming as well for school-aged children and grandchildren. Join us in our wonderful Torah Tikes experience for the youngest kids, our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, confirmation and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with terrific and serious Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHATucson.org to sign up. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to everybody. You can also watch our services on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson, BEITSIMCHA Tucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. For more about Beit Simcha, to come to services, Torah Tikes program, religious school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and Facebook, go to Beit Simcha Tucson, BEITSIMCHATucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, and the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of southern Arizona. As we celebrate my dad, Rabbi Cantor Baruch Kohan, for his 100th birthday today, I'll play a little bit more of his music. This is an atypical piece of his, basically the Torah meets the Beatles, a setting of Shalom Rav Leohave Toratecha, great peace have they who love the Torah. This was recorded by our longtime house band, Avanim, and that's me singing.
Shalom.
Salva, salva, salva.
That was Shalom Rav, Le'ohavei Torah by Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Kohan, celebrating his 100th birthday today at Beit Simcha at 2 p.m. Join us. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, it's now a couple weeks after Seder, but at my Seders, I always have people do the four questions in a variety of languages. The public Seder at Beit Simcha, my congregation, we had 11 different languages, and I missed an opportunity for a couple more because Jews come from all over the world. The Jewish community of Europe, we tend to kind of automatically assume is all Ashkenazic, but that's not true at all as you begin to move east. Let's talk about that a little bit.
And also not only east, but south. Italian Jews are not Ashkenazic. They're not Sephardic.
No.
They're Italian Jews.
Yeah, and some are Nosach Roma, and some are some other Italian Nosach. I mean, it's really interesting.
Well, there are a lot who moved from Libya and Egypt after 1948. But the core, the root of the Italian Jewish population, which goes back, obviously, to the time of the Roman Empire.
Right, right. Maccabean times, even. Yep.
Jews who developed their own traditions and their own nusach, their own tunes, their own customs, and they don't fall into either camp. A more interesting case for me, because as you know, I'm a Balkan fanatic.
Yes, you are.
All those little quarrels and details and differences in accents just endlessly fascinate me. But I have found that very few American Jews are aware that there's a sizable Jewish population throughout the Balkan Peninsula who speak Ladino, because they arrived there in the wake of the expulsion from Spain in 1492, and they stayed there and they preserved their linguistic, culinary, what's it called, liturgical convention.
Sure.
And so they frequently speak Ladino, which is the Spanish version of Yiddish in a way. Ladino can be written, unlike Yiddish, Ladino can be written in either alphabet. It can be written in the Latin alphabet or the Hebrew alphabet.
Right.
Yiddish is only written in the Hebrew alphabet, as you know. But, you know, Jews in Sofia or Plovdiv or Thessaloniki or Sarajevo or Skopje will wish each other a Pesach Alegre instead of a Zishin Pesach. And we don't think twice about how heavy is the influence of Yiddish culture on our perceptions of Jewish culture, even just the way we greet people for Pesach. Aziz in Pesach, Afrelich in Pesach, those are Yiddish phrases. But in the Balkans, you don't use those phrases. You use Spanish phrases. And their Spanish is sort of more pure than the Spanish that's spoken today in Spain, because it hasn't evolved much since the days of Cervantes. So it's very pure, old-fashioned Spanish.
Yeah, most people think it's Castilian in origin. That's from the area of Castile that most of the Ladino Spanish comes from.
But, you know, here we eat albondigas, and we think of that as a Mexican food. It's actually Spanish. And in Ladino, they have soup with albondigas, especially for Yontif.
Yeah, yeah. It's considered Jewish food.
Right. Exactly.
I'll add one other point, which is, in fact, the Jews of Hungary, the Jews of many of the German-speaking countries also didn't have Yiddish and don't understand, you know, when you say Aziz and Pesach, they're confused because they might say Chag Sameach, but they don't have that either. It's always complicated and fascinating. Thanks so much, Tom. We will talk next week.
I look forward to that.
Time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Sarah comes home from the Peace Corps service in Uganda and surprises her mother, Sadie, who's just about to light Shabbat candles on Friday night and serve some matzo ball soup. Sadie is so thrilled, she keeps hugging and kissing Sarah. Finally, she says, "Sit down, darling. Tell me all about what you did there in Uganda." Sarah says, "Mom, I have big news. I got married while I was in Africa." "Oy, I didn't know. Mazel tov," says Sadie, "but how could you do that without telling me?" "Well," Sarah answers, "I found a guy who was just the kind of man you always told me to marry. I just couldn't wait. I had to do it."
Her mother, Sadie, asks, "So, what's he like? Where is this husband?" "He's waiting outside while I tell you," her daughter answers. "Outside? What are you talking about? Bring him in. I want to meet my new son-in-law." Sarah brings him in, and to her shock and consternation, Sadie sees a giant tattooed African man standing before her, wearing a feathered codpiece, an ornate headdress, animal tooth beads, a ceremonial mask, holding a tall spear. Sadie turns to her daughter and says, "Oy, darling, I said marry a rich doctor." That was quite a terrible old Jewish joke of the week. See, witch doctor, never mind. Special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. Emor, our portion this week in Leviticus, begins as so many others do. God commands the people of Israel. But the language this time is different. Usually, commandments begin with the Hebrew word daber, speak to the children of Israel, or occasionally tzav, command the children of Israel. This time, a much softer word, emor, is used. Emor, say to the priests, the children of Aaron. Why? There's a clue in the continuation of that first sentence of our portion. It actually begins, say to the priest, and then adds, say to them. Our Torah commentators do not believe the Torah is ever truly redundant, and the Talmud teaches there is a subtle message here. Be cautious in how we adults speak to children. Emor means to speak softly and kindly. Good advice in teaching children at any time. But why specifically is this word emor used twice in regard to the priestly commands? After all, priests are not children. Perhaps the essence lies in the central message of holiness given to our ancestors and articulated forcefully at the start of last week's portion of Kedoshim. You shall all be holy, for I, God, am holy. Here in Emor, as the specifics of the designated representatives of the people in holiness are articulated, the change to softer forms of language is notable. The priests are the ones who actually have to help the people achieve holiness. They must be given the careful, scrupulous requirements, but also inspired to do that work with devotion and passion. There will be a balance to maintain between conscientious, obsessive attention to detail and finding a way to communicate the sacredness of their calling to the Jewish people, who are not as occupied with its processes and may not be as emotionally invested in it as they are. Thus, the word used here is emor, speak, explain, teach, inspire, not simply daber, tell, command, order, require. In leading people towards holiness, there must be a serious, conscientious devotion to quality. Badly performed rituals will inspire no one. But there must also be a demonstrated process of caring about the way those processes are experienced by the devotees. Perhaps, even especially, a love for both process and result. This week of Emor, may we all be inspired to seriously and caringly seek holiness in our lives, not only through our Jewish practice, but by the ways that we treat those around us. If we do that, we will inspire others to look for holiness as well. When we return in a moment on Too Jewish, our guest, author Jay Neugeborn, shares his remarkable story of how he has become more productive as a writer now than ever, although he is not getting younger, but his books are coming out faster and fresher than ever. Find out why and how when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
The ceasefire arranged by the Trump administration between the U.S., Israel, and Iran, and between Israel and the Hezbollah terrorists of Lebanon, both seemed to be holding last week. Israelis accustomed to constantly running to bomb shelters to avoid being blown up by falling shrapnel from downed Iranian missiles and incoming Hezbollah rockets
had at least a reprieve over the week of Israel Independence Day celebrations for Yom HaAtzmaut. We don't know what will come out of all of this war just yet. The naval conflict in the Straits of Hormuz continued during the quote-unquote ceasefire. Ships were captured, mine-laying ships are at work and then being blown up and so on. But the move towards some sort of durable cessation of hostilities is at least promising. Speaking of Yom HaAtzmaut, Israel Independence Day, Bibi Netanyahu tried to get Donald Trump to come to Israel again to accept lighting one of the torches as a hero of Israel, but Trump declined. This torch ceremony, which has become a big deal in recent years, did have one foreign head of state honored, the rather expressive president of Argentina, Javier Milei, who is a philo-Semite who has promised to complete his own conversion to Judaism one day. Milei joined performers singing a Spanish song at the torch ceremony, a highlight of the Israel Independence Day celebrations. It was, well, unusual for what is typically a rather dignified ceremony, but he had a good time. In other Israel news, an Israeli soldier who bludgeoned a statue of Jesus in southern Lebanon and another soldier who photographed it have both been dismissed from combat duty and sentenced to 30 days in military detention, the Israeli military said last week. The IDF expresses deep regret over the incident and emphasizes its operations in Lebanon are directed solely against the Hezbollah terrorist organization and other terrorist groups, not against Lebanese civilians, said the IDF. The military also announced it had replaced the damaged statue with a new one in full coordination with the local community of Debel in southern Lebanon. That town is a Christian enclave within a region that is a Hezbollah stronghold. Photos of the incident depicting the soldier striking an overturned Jesus statue were quickly condemned by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and the IDF as they spread online. A letter condemning the act drew over 80 signatures by prominent Jewish leaders, including former Israeli cabinet minister Michael Melchior. I think he's a past guest of Too Jewish, by the way. American anti-Semitism activist Shabbos Kestenbaum and Orthodox rabbis in Israel and the United States, and some non-Orthodox ones, too. This act is a chilul Hashem, a desecration of God's name, the letter said. It is an affront to the ancient Christian communities in the Middle East and the Christians all over the world. It is a vile betrayal of the Jewish values upon which the State of Israel was founded. It is a wound inflicted upon the fragile Jewish-Christian friendship that is more important than ever. The announcement of the punishment for the soldiers came while the IDF said it was probing a different incident in the West Bank, in which a reserve soldier reportedly killed two Palestinians, aged 14 and 32. The IDF has killed hundreds of Hezbollah terrorists and attacked infrastructure used by the terror group in the 24 hours before the ceasefire between Israel and the Lebanese Hezbollah terrorists took effect. The IDF revealed that last week in its own statement. During the IDF strikes, more than 150 Hezbollah terrorists were killed. About 300 infrastructure targets were attacked, including rocket and missile launchers, command centers, and weapons storage facilities all across Lebanon. Among those killed was Ali Reza Abbas, commander of the Hezbollah unit operating in Bint Jabil, a town in southern Lebanon that has served as a prominent Hezbollah post and has seen a number of its commanders killed over the war. Since the start of this war, called Operation Roaring Lion by Israel in late February, more than 1,800 Hezbollah terrorists have been killed in Lebanon, according to the IDF's own numbers. Some sad news today. Michael Tilson Thomas, the outstanding classical music conductor and composer and music educator, died this last week of brain cancer at the age of 81. You know, I had the pleasure of watching Michael Tilson Thomas conduct the Los Angeles Philharmonic pretty often way back in the 1980s. He was the principal guest conductor of the LA Phil when Zubin Mehta was the conductor. Tilson Thomas conducted probably the best classical music concerts I heard while I subscribed, including a soaring performance I will never forget of Sibelius' Finlandia. And Tilson Thomas was a specialist in many composers, especially the Jewish composer Gustav Mahler and the American Jewish composer Aaron Copland, but not Sibelius.
didn't matter. Tilson Thomas was a great conductor. He was also a fellow Angeleno, born in Los Angeles in 1944, but he came from Yiddish theater royalty. Michael Tilson Thomas was the grandson of Yiddish theater stars Boris and Bessie Tomaszewski, who performed brilliantly in the Yiddish Theater District on 2nd Avenue in New York. The family talent went all the way back to Tilson Thomas's great-grandfather Pinchas, an actor and playwright, and before that to a long line of Chazonim cantors. His father, Theodore Herzl Tomaszewski, changed his name to Ted Thomas. He himself was a poet and painter. Michael Tilson Thomas founded the New World Symphony, which trained many, many young musicians for professional careers, many of them prominent. And eventually, after holding a variety of distinguished positions, he became the music director of the San Francisco Symphony in 1995. Tilson Thomas elevated its status in the music world dramatically. His extraordinary career included a number of Grammy Awards as well as a Kennedy Center honor. May his memory, like his music, bring only blessing. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews round the world. We welcome back to Two Jewish, our guest this morning. Jay Neugeborn is an extraordinary author. Is it 25 books you've published now?
Yeah, this is the 25th, yes. I wrote my first novel when I was 8 years old. My mother typed it out for me, and I remember that the typewriter ribbon was half red and half black.
Yeah.
So that the words on the page were half red, half black. And I read a chapter of it every Monday morning to my fifth grade class at PS 246 in Brooklyn. It ran to about 70 pages. But after that, I never thought of being a writer again until I left, well, basically left home until I was in college. I think because of the currents running in my family, which I will describe in a minute, I think I did that to protect it, because pretty much anything I cared about when I was growing up would be taken away from me. And but once I was away from home, effectively away from home, suddenly the desire to write came up loud and strong, and by the time I finished college, I had written two novels.
I have a funny story to ask about, autobiographical, A Samaritan at Camp Winsocki. You talk about your own Jewish background there, how you were the most Jewish of your Jewish friends at home, but here, you know, you kept kosher, you went to shul Saturday, you chanted from the Torah, your bar mitzvah, and so on. But then you went to camp with all Orthodox kids. Explain a little bit about that experience.
A cousin of mine, my father's side of the family, was Orthodox, modern Orthodox. He was one of nine children. The elder six were born in the old country, and the last three, including my father, were born here. His younger brother, my Uncle Ben, was president for many years of the Young Israel of Eastern Parkway, and they were all very firm on my father's side of the family. They did not even pick up the phone on the Shabbos. They didn't ride. They didn't do anything. One of my cousins on that side of the family, he and his wife owned a summer camp that I went to every year from the age of about 11 until about 20. And my mother was the camp nurse or the camp mother. And at the camp, we prayed three times a day, observed the Sabbath, put an Erev around the camp so people could carry things. And so for 2 months a year, I lived in an Orthodox, modern Orthodox Jewish community where everything else about us was very American. I mean, we played ball. We put on shows like Carousel in Oklahoma, Gilbert and Sullivan. But during the rest of the year, September until June and July and August, I was the most Orthodox of all my friends, but not Orthodox the way my father's family was. I would go to shul on Saturdays, and I put on tefillin every morning, actually, till I was 18. But I played ball on Saturday. I'd go to the movies. I would ride. I'd use the telephone. I was an American Jew identified as a Jew. I was involved in my synagogue, president of the synagogue, of the students in the Hebrew school. But among people, friends who mostly Jewish, who did not observe the Sabbath. So it was, and the most poignant moment for me that I write about was at the summer camp. There was a girl I liked very much, and she liked me. And I asked her if she would be my girlfriend, and she said she couldn't. And I said, why not? You like me. She said, oh, I like you a lot, but you're not Jewish enough for me. And so that's pretty much puts that in perspective.
And then you use that in the story to explore the whole question of Ezra and the period after the return from the Babylonian exile and putting aside the wives who weren't Jewish enough for the, and so on. It's and yet you do it in such a fluid way. I mean, it's a really valuable and I think brilliant story.
Well, thank you. I was pleased to write about that and to explore the situation I lived in, you know, as an adolescent, as a child and adolescent, and to realize where the value of the Orthodox beliefs comes from, which is very old, ancient, as Ezra says. If you intermarriage is, in Ezra's book, the book of Ezra, is the beginning of the death knell of the Jewish community.
I want to explore the theme of abandonment, which it plays a role. And tell us a little more about your family, the way it all played out, both in your family of origin and then your own family later.
Yeah, I have a younger brother, Robert, who was very gifted, talented as a young man, a good athlete, very good chess player. In fact, I write about this in the book as an essay. Bobby Fischer wouldn't play with him. And this was when Bobby Fischer was the national junior champion. Robert and Bobby were in a chess club together at Erasmus. And Fischer was already the best young player, young junior champion in the United States. Robert was a good player. And I said, well, why won't he play with you, Robbie? He says, because he always says, Nugelborn, you play crazy. I can't play with you. And, of course, as I discovered, and I write about this in the essay, Fischer played very much by the book. He knew every move that had ever been made by any grandmaster, let's say. But in any event, my brother Robert, who was a gifted, bright young man, won a scholarship to college, had a breakdown, major mental breakdown and emotional breakdown when he was 19, and spent most of his life in and out of mental hospitals, psych wards, and halfway houses. He essentially, after a few years while he was in a large state mental hospital, Creedmoor, which had over 7,000 patients at the time, my parents left him. My father never saw him again. Mm. My father only lived 3 more years. My mother lived for another 30 years, only saw him twice, and I became basically his caregiver and his advocate and took care of him as much as I could for the rest of his life. I must say that it was also, most of the time, something I did willingly and with love. Robert and I were very close. In the book, I have an essay about Robert where I talk about, not about taking care of him, for which people would praise me, and I say, look, he's my brother. That's what you do. But also I tried to talk about all, not what I gave to him, but what he gave to me, which was considerable.
You became a single dad, right?
Yes.
And raised your kids by yourself. And you kind of mentioned there's abandonment, that your wife just abandoned the kids, right? That responsibility, somehow you managed to be a single father to 3 kids, a college professor, an author, caregiver to your brother, caregiver for your mother. Is that just Jewish responsibility?
It was. I have one essay, and I've only written about being a single parent once in one essay, which, as you know, is about when I took my youngest son to college.
Yeah.
And my thoughts at that time. I never wanted to write about it for many reasons, but one major one was that, yes, it was very unique. This is, you know, we're talking, you know, 50 years ago, for a man to be raising children by himself. But women do it all the time without getting, quote, credit for it.
Right.
And I just didn't want to get credit for something because of this anomalous situation. But it was a lot of responsibility, but it was also a great gift. I mean, how many men get to be mother and father to three wonderful young children and who have now become adults, all with all of whom I'm very close, and they all have, you know, I got them through, which I think...
Hey, that's what we all hope for.
...is the major achievement of my life, right. To have been able to get them through.
And they're off the payroll, too.
That's true. And they're not at home, which is also...
It's also not so bad. That may explain why you write so many... You've published so much since you were 70, I saw... articles, books, like you're just prolific. It's extraordinary.
I'm steady, Rabbi. I had, as you will know from the book, I had 8 unpublished books before my first published book. And I just keep going. I'm just steady. You know, if you write every day, eventually you get some pages. And sometimes they make something called a book or an essay or a story or a screenplay. But the difference, I would say now, and I've written about this recently, is that these years are turning out to be the most productive years of my writing life because, among other things, the daily responsibilities that I've had are gone. My brother, unfortunately, is not with us anymore. My children are well launched into their own lives. I don't have a full-time teaching job. And so I am time rich.
And you're using it well. Jay, where can people go to find out more about you, to find out more about Dickens in Brooklyn?
Well, Dickens in Brooklyn is available in your local bookstores, I hope, from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Bookshop, or go to the publisher's page, Eastover Press, which has done a very handsome job. I can't resist mentioning that the book jacket was designed and drawn by my son, Eli, who is a wonderful illustrator and artist, and the author photo is by my grandson. Zachary Newcomb, but the book's available everywhere.
And a family project. Jay, thank you so much. It's always a pleasure, and can't wait till your next book comes out.
Me too. Thank you, Rabbi. It's been a pleasure.
When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
Congregation Beit Simcha hosts a historic celebration honoring the 100th birthday of Rabbi and cantor Baruch J. Kohan.
Hashkiveinu Adonai.
Everyone is invited to join us for A Century of Blessing, Sunday, April 26th, 2026, from 2 p.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the Congregation Sanctuary, 12111 North La Cholla Boulevard. You can find out more at www.beitsimchatucson.org. A true national Jewish treasure. Rabbi Baruch Kohan's century of life is defined by an extraordinary blend of spiritual leadership and artistic achievement. His diverse career spans roles as a World War II Navy sonar man, a successful TV producer during Hollywood's golden age, a prolific composer, recording artist, concert performer, author, editor, and dedicated educator. He famously taught actor Gene Wilder how to chant like a traditional rabbi for the film The Frisco Kid.
Rabbi Baruch Kohan's life is a testament to the power of tradition, creativity, and joy, said Rabbi Sam Kohan of Beit Simcha. Come celebrate 100 years of his music, his teaching, and his spirit. His contributions nationally and right here make this incredible event an honor for our entire community. The Century of Blessing Party includes Baruch Kohan's music, his favorite foods, ice cream cake and bourbon, swing music by the Jazzmatics, classic cars from the 1920s, and much more. You can wish Baruch Kohan a happy 100th birthday in his tribute book and sign up to attend this great afternoon at www.beitsimchatucson.org or by calling 520-276-5675. Sunday, April 26th at 2 p.m. at Beit Simcha. Don't miss this historic afternoon.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Too Jewish. Our guest will be Professor Ian Baruma, author of Stay Alive, Berlin, 1939 to 1945. It's a fascinating book. He's a great guest. And join us, Congregation Beit Simcha, every Friday night. Services in Onik Shabbat at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, too, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, in person and on our Facebook page. And join us this afternoon, if you can, for my dad, Rabbi and Cantor Baruch Kohan, a many-time guest of Too Jewish, at his 100th birthday celebration, A Century of Blessing. It's today, Sunday, April 26th at 2 p.m. at Beit Simcha. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BEITSIMCHA, Tucson.org, to sign up and attend. Our playout this morning comes from my dad's work for his 100th birthday, his extremely upbeat song, Pitachta, from the Psalms, the psalm that we do all the way through Hanukkah, by the way. I have taken off my clothes of mourning and wrapped myself in joy. My friends, have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly, at last, of peace.
Too Jewish is sponsored by Too Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.